On today's Daytime Confidential podcast, we have a special guest, none other than TV Guide's Michael Logan. We already did our normal podcast for the week, but we had to have a special one to get Michael to come in and weigh in on all the cray-cray that has been August 2012 in soapdom. So stay tuned. Michael Logan, welcome back to the Daytime Confidential podcast.
Thanks, kids.
Well, we always meet under we always meet under such dire circumstances, it seems like, in the industry. Or not really dire, but crazy circumstances. So we're just going to start with the latest. General Hospital, Steve Burton has left the building. What is going on, Michael?
Well, it was a shock. It was rumored, you know, but a lot of these things are rumored. Everybody's kind of starting to talk about Maurice. Is Maurice leaving next? You know, I mean, these things happen, and sometimes they're just a bunch of baloney, and sometimes they're quite true. And I think this one maybe was a bit more of a shock because Steve had been kind of, you know, talking about this for a very long time, and it was kind of the little boy who cried wolf. I don't think anybody actually believed him, but he was ready to get out, and you know, there was really no nothing he was hearing in his negotiations or anything to really keep him here. He's got a lot of stuff going on, and much of it personal, and you know, so he's out of there. But it's I'm kind of surprised what a big deal it is. Nothing against Steve, but it's like, you know, people are really kind of shaken up about it. A lot of action, a lot of stuff on the internet. I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah, ragging over here, sitting shiver like some fool. Stop.
Stop. Well, Mike, Michael, one of the things that one of the biggest, I guess, for me, in terms of kind of a realization, is that had this happened a year ago, it probably would have been tragic for GH because, you know, with the previous regime, and I'm a huge fan of Steve and Jason and Maurice, so, you know, I'm certainly one. I was, you know, I'm a Goozaholic, so. But had he left during Goozah's years, it probably would have left a bigger gaping hole because of the fact that so many of the stories, like, revolved around Jason. Now, you know, we've got the One Life to Live guys, and the soap is a little bit more balanced. So do you think it will impact the ratings at all?
Oh, I think they could probably work around this pretty well. And I talked to Steve again this morning, and he is definitely open to returning. So I don't know, and neither did he know yet how they're going to wrap up, you know, the stories that are going on here now. But it's my understanding that the plan will be to, you know, keep some stuff open, and, you know, maybe he'll come back for a visit, or, you know, maybe he won't, depending on whether or not he winds up in Genoa City. Always a possibility.
Been saying it since Jamie hinted that he may be leaving Honey Trust.
JT Hellstrom is now being played.
It can't do it to me. Girl, sit down.
You know, them FOJs, they pop up in the damnedest places. But exactly. Yeah, I think you're right, Jamie. It would have been you know, probably a bigger hole to fill you know, back in the Goose of Phelps you know, regime. But I think it's still, you know, I think it still is. I don't know, certainly nothing Steve said to me, but my personal take on this is that I'm really not sure Frank and Ron Carlovati were all that eager to try too hard. I think they see this as an opportunity to save a good chunk of change, and you know, they've got both Easton and Roger Howarth there, and in a big way, and this, you know, opens the door to let that financially continue, and, you know, who knows, maybe even bring in some more Landview peeps. You know, I think this is not the devastating thing it is for the fans, for these, the folks running the show. I think this is going to be something that's probably going to be pretty, you know, pretty easy to make work.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the most, you know, of course, the entire report was awesome. You know, I love your interviews because you ask the questions that everybody wants to ask if they'll do the doggone interview. You get that interview and you ask the tough questions. One of the things that intrigued me most was the whole telenovela talk, you know, because we're seeing a lot of that. They're so hot with Latin America. I mean, whole new networks are springing up based around telenovelas, yet we can't figure out how to keep our daytime soaps on the air. So do you have any extra dirt or dish that you can share for our little hungry listeners out there about this Franco-phrenia?
Oh, I can't.
Well, it's my understanding that it's damn close to a done deal. This is not just pie in the sky, wouldn't it be great if type stuff that they
dark stuff. Okay.
they're very close to getting this thing done, and you know, I don't think at this point, you know, it's like James Franco, man, he comes up with three new projects a week. If, you know, it was announced he was next opening a clown school, I don't think any of us would blink.
I'm,
you know,
so,
I mean, so this is really, frankly, not that strange. I think it's very cool that they, you know, want to work together to have a great little team there and want to do some stuff. And it is the future, you know. I mean, this telenovela thing, I mean, you're right, Jamie. It's like we're everybody, you know, in American soaps are wondering what's wrong and what happened. And, you know, the telenovelas are kicking ass and never hotter. And you know, there's you know, it's a great, cool, wonderful world out there, and people want to get into it.
What did you think of Hollywood Heights, Jill and Josh's American soap?
I enjoyed it. I have to say, I didn't stick with it. I haven't stuck with it regularly, but I popped in and out a couple of episodes here and there, and you know, I think it's enjoyable. You know, I just the only reason I didn't stick with it is I just watching too damn much TV. I don't have enough time to.
Same here.
It's too much, and I'm going like, now the fall's here already. I'm going, wait a minute, stop. Yeah. You know, it's all good stuff. You know, but it's like, yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, and I was surprised at how sort of really well produced it was, because I kind of thought maybe, you know, a Nick telenovela might be, you know, kind of on the cheapskate side, but it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, and the kids were smart and sexy. That's one thing that I like.
Yeah.
You know, you look at these daytime soaps and, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about B&B later, but that endless Hope, Liam, Steffi conversation about one thing. And then you tune into Hollywood Heights and the kids actually have personalities beyond, you know, who they're going to marry. So I enjoyed it. I did.
And some good, now, and some really good talents. I mean, obviously,
yes.
the new Noah is
yes!
coming from there. So, you know, it's like, who knows what other soap stars will be discovered in that cast. But they got some good group of kids, man.
Yeah, they do. They cast really well.
Jay, what's his face? Josh Morrow better not catch a cold, because we'll see James Franco as Nick Newman. So.
Hell, if I was Kate Linder, I'd be nervous. You know, you never.
Oh my God!
I could see Franco going, I want to play after the maid. You know?
Oh God! Oh, that's funny.
When Jesus comes back. She will be there, and she will be on every red carpet. Event there is. I love Kate. Kate is, you know, Matt Webb Minovich from TV Line. It's fun of me because whenever I tease on Facebook, I'm interviewing one of my favorite soap stars. He always writes in the comments, Kate Linder. You get an interview with Kate now. Anytime.
Did you guys read Jeannie Cooper's book?
I have not read it yet.
There is a great chapter in there where she talks about how Kate Linder, this is after Bill, I forget what the writing regime it was, but it was after, you know, Bill was out of there, but Kate Linder took a meeting with the bigwigs over at YNR about this great story idea she had. Let's kill Mrs. Chancellor. Yeah. Esther will take over the mansion. And Jeannie was like, of course, so pissed about this and puts it in the book. I mean, Jeannie, like, goes for it, man. She's like, you know, she talks about feuding with Mel Scott and Ed Scott. I mean, she doesn't. She doesn't
give a shit. I love her.
Hell, would you? Would you? If you were 83 and Gene Cooper?
Yeah,
I mean, come on.
I'm 31 and I do it now. Shit. oh my God. Kate Linda, shame on you, madam. You want to get No, ma'am. Are you insane?
Nathan, she's so all about Eve.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Kate Linda. Ooh. I need to buy that book. I got to go out to Barnes & Noble to this and buy that book.
Well, now that we know The Young and Restless has been canceled, thanks to that hot scoop for Brenda Dixon.
Look, the reason Luke and I,
we are not going to discuss Brenda Dixon on this podcast due to stuff that has transpired off the podcast. Brenda Dixon is persona non grata.
We've been censored. I love it.
Brenda Dixon will never appear on this blog or podcast ever.
Let me tell you why this happens. Okay. Every time this woman makes the news, every single time, you know, the whole Hawaii drama or whatever, we're a blog. We aggregate content. You know, that's our bread and butter. We take something someone else says and we say something snarky about it. So every single time Brenda Dixon has made the news, whether it be someone else's interview or a story where she's saying Heil Hitler about her husband or something, if we post it on DC, about 3 months later, we get some incoherent email. I have found out that you are making money off of my likeness and image, and my image is copyright protected. You will be sued. And every time we have to explain to her, lady, we have done nothing illegal. You gave the interview, and we posted it on our site. So when her latest crazy happened, I was like, you know what? We're just not even posting this on DC. to deal with. And then she'll go, and everything I said is true, because that's what really ticks her off, because I'll make some snarky comment about it.
Yeah.
And everything is true, every word. So, yeah. Go with God, Brenda. We wish you on your tell-all book on the website.
Yeah, she accused me of photoshopping her picture one time. She was like, you photoshopped my picture. And I was just like, no, bitch, you need to. Yeah. I'm like, you need to take that up with the photographer, madam. I did not Photoshop anything.
She has repeatedly asked us to take down photos that were legally licensed.
Yeah, because it would make her look well. I'm like, well, honey, that ain't the photographer's fault at this point. But
that gal is a whole new kind of cuckoo. You know, I mean, it's just like nothing like her.
Well, you recently spoke with Frank Valentini about the return of Ian Buchanan to General Hospital. Do you by chance have any additional scoop you can spill?
Well, I pretty much gave what he would give me, but I think it's interesting that they were so close to pulling off that as a secret. You know, I mean, word had spread that maybe Ian was coming back, but didn't you think it was kind of refreshing that they actually like got something on the air for a change? That really shocked us, and it reminded you of the old days of soap watching, where mm-hmm. you actually had to tune in and your jaw dropped. You know, I mean, I admire them for doing that, and I think Frank wants to do a whole bunch more. But no, I pretty much gave out everything he had to say. But he did not want to answer the question about the. Length of story, and I do know that it's not a contract for Ian, that it's going to be a non-contract gig. Not that it's not going to turn into a big story, but I don't know that anybody over there wanted to fight a battle with the network to hire anybody 50 plus these days. You know what I mean? So.
Speaking of that, GH is doing a lot of that recently. You know, they're catching a lot of, you know, Twitter flack for the one-lifers, but they brought back quite a bit of the old guard, you know, shall you say, of GH, you know, with Felicia and Anna and Heather. But then you transition that to the Bell soaps, which have always done their vets pretty good. And then we're experiencing this, and I have to commend Brad Bell before I start this part, because I feel like he kept the B&B vets. I posted this on Facebook the other day. He kept those vets from having to deal with the usual round of pay cut drama for a long time, probably as long as he could. And now, now we find them in the midst of this same type of situation. So what are your thinking? Because there's been a lot of different things being said, I think it was In-Depth ran the first report about Susan Flannery, and it kind of just seemed like it was just her time to retire and things like that. And then Digest ran a piece in their publication that basically said she was – it was more than just I'm ready to retire, that she's frustrated about the – and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not directly quoting, but that there is some frustration on the fact that the show has totally focused on the younger set. So – Any intel on?
Well, I'm not so sure I buy that part of it.
Okay.
First of all, Susan's kind of periodically thrown in a reference to retire, every so often over the last few years, and I know it's been in her mind, and sooner or later it'll be the right thing to do. However, I talked to Brad about really what he'd done all summer with this just one storyline thing, which is, pretty huge and kind of crazy, I think, for him to have done that. And he's not that these characters won't continue, but that's pretty much done, as far as being the only story, he's got a lot of stuff this fall. So I don't know that could possibly have been Susan's excuse for wanting to quit, because, that's not what the fall's looking like. I mean, he's going to build Rick into the new Ridge. Rick's going to make a play for Forrester Creations. Mm. There's going to be a lot there. He's going to get very manipulative and strategic to get Thomas out of the picture and really go for Caroline. Heather Tom's got a big story. She's going to catch wind of what Dollar Bill, has been doing with, the Hope Liam Steffi thing, and just as she's about to give birth, and I think that's going to lead to, real marital troubles, for them, because she doesn't want to be raising her child with, a man like that. That's big. He's got plans. I mean, he's got apparently a big story, he's said, I don't know what it is at all with Susan. So that's not the way the fall's looking for B&B. Thank you, Jesus. But I don't think, I don't think that, that can't be, that doesn't hold any water as near as I can tell, why Flannery would quit. I think,
and he's
probably
always been a writer who can turn on a dime. Another thing that I love about him, because I liked it in the beginning, and then now I'm just like, oh my God, if I hear that girl say something about that wedding wasn't true for me again, I'm just going to scream. But Brad seems to be one of those writers that when he senses that something is enough, he turns the show on a dime, and then it's really good again for six months. So,
well, we got that from Dad. Dad would pull the plug. Of course, Bill was famous for if something wasn't working, it'd just be gone by Tuesday. It just wouldn't be there. It just would not be there, and he'd offer no explanations on air. It was just gone. I always admired that about him. Mm-hmm. And but this did go on way too long, and I think it just,
And the ratings are up, though.
So there was nothing going on in the ratings that made him think this isn't working, and I talked to him about it, like, what the hell were you thinking, kind of a talk, and he likened this, I don't think accurately, but he likened it to the beginning of the show when it was Ridge and Brooke and Carolyn. Yeah, but there was so much more to the show at that point. I mean, I remember it. It wasn't, just one plot. But, but he did feel that that's what you had to do to really cement these as important people. And I think he sees this is the future. I don't know that he knew Ron. He didn't know Ron was so close to being out the door necessarily that it would be so soon for Susan. But I do believe he sees this as preventative measures. He's got a very small show. You can't lose two or three big core people on The Bold and the Beautiful like you can on an hour program. And so this, you know, he's building the future at part, you know, at the annoyance of many of us, but, you know, but we got through it. It's almost done, you know, new stuff, much more cool, good sounding stuff is, you know, is coming. And what he was doing with Rick sounded to me, you know, very good. And I kind of, you know, although I thought a lot of it was probably, you know, revenge on, you know, on Ron Moss taking off, but I thought his immediate, you know, decision to recast Ridge and keep going was pretty ballsy, and suggested, you know, there could be some big, interesting stuff there. He claims he's got a big story for Brooks. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, it's not, you know, this isn't what we've been through all summer is not the, not the future.
Well, speaking of Ridge, there is a rumor going around that Peter Reckle may be taking over that role. What do you think about that? Is that true? Is it false? Is it all of the above? What? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know anything about true or false, but I think Brad would be foolish to not have him on the list. Brad told me he had a list, and it was and we know the way Brad casts, and first of all, we're dealing with an age group where you'd really have to go with a major player from the soap scene, you know. So if he's not thinking about, and this would be an opportunity to go very, listen, you're not going to find another Ron Moss in a lot of ways. So I don't think that, you know, there's somebody even close that's going to bring that, you know, Ron Moss thing to B&B. So I think if you're looking at a list of big names that ain't got a gig at the moment, you've got Peter on the list, you've got Michael Knight on the list, you've got a handful of people that are right there. Yeah, I think you've got people that are, you know, I think he absolutely is going to go in a different direction. He has to go in a different direction. You know,
that
you're not going to find anybody close to Ron. Nobody physically is going to be able to pull off what Ron can pull off at age 60. And I don't know that we should continue asking anybody, you know, to do that.
I mean, so, Michael Knight in the role is a different direction now.
Where's Robert Kelker Kelly?
Well, you know.
Somewhere with some that little girl that he used to best.
Probably in a police lineup somewhere. You know?
Look, I love him too, but y'all know he was dating that little girl that played Jamie when she. Look, let me stop before I get a suit. remember Sammy's little friend Jamie? Yeah. Next thing you know, she's his wife.
Oh my God.
Don't sue me, Robert Kecker Kelly. I don't have anybody.
I think he'd be a great choice, but you know, I don't know even if he was here and not in handcuffs, so we'd it'd be wise to cast him, you know. But I think you're talking. You know, he's got to go with a name. You know, he's got to.
Vincent Irizarry.
Vincent. I could see Vincent. You know, I'm hoping Vincent will go to. I'd love to see Vincent go to GH because we know that Prospect Park's, you know, rights are over as of January, and he's a doctor, so, you know, there you go. But let's talk a little bit about, a lot about B&B's big sister, the Young and the Restless, which, you know, I keep saying, well, what's the biggest news? Because it changes every day. But the biggest news for a while this month was that they have a new EP and a new head writer in Jill Farron Phelps and Josh Griffith. You had the first exclusive interview with Jill previewing her, The Young and the Restless. What are your thoughts? You know, I love, thank you for asking. You know I'm on a mission, though, Logan, because spent the last 15 years of my life blaming this woman for my Frankie Frame.
You know what's so funny is that ever, you know, when that happened, I wrote, you know, as we all did at the time, those of us who were living then, you know, not you babies, but you know, it's like we all wrote the scathing editorial about that hour in which Frankie Frame was stalked and murdered before our very eyes. I mean, it was relentless. It was ghastly. It was the worst.
Did it happen for like 2 days or something
Awful. Yes. It was just an episode. I mean, The setup was at the end of one episode, then the actual. Yeah.
But it was the whole show, you know, so I hated it. And every time I've seen Jill ever since then, she's first of all told me she's sorry she killed Maureen Bauer and she didn't kill Frankie Frame. I mean, it's like, I'm so used to seeing, I could see her running into her at the grocery store and she'll tell me that. So it's like, I'm so used to, I didn't know that was going to be like the biggest part of the interview.
I was like,
I've heard it a thousand times. But yeah, like, you know, she will not accept blame for that. I'm trying to remember now. I believe, was it Maggie DePriest that was writing it at the time?
I think she was. That year had like two or three different sets of head writers, which is always a problem in daytime. Yeah. But, you know. Yeah. But, yeah.
But she is not. Yeah, JFP is not accepting any blame on that one, but you know, but I don't know. What do I think? You know, I always take crap from people because I was a much greater supporter of Guza and Jill at General Hospital than it seemed anybody else was in their right mind was. I was very happy to hear Jill was taking over. I feel like, not that she isn't prone to mistakes, but really, who in this business isn't? This could have been. I can think of a lot of choices that would have been really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And this is the big one, you know. This is the big one. And
you McTavish, yes, I said it.
Well, you know. And one of the things I'll say, and nobody wants to hear this, but, you know, an awful lot of what we hated, I would say the lion's share of what people hated about General Hospital in the last few years was indeed Guza. You know, Guza was a man who could not be controlled. He wrote that show. Jill couldn't tell him what to do. Franz gave him unlimited support for a very long time, but nobody was telling this guy what to do. And that's a danger that a lot of soaps fall into, but particularly with Guza. Now, you know, that said, there's still a hell of a lot that I liked about what was done over there, and I think Jill is, as far as the physical production that she gets on the air every day, I think she's extraordinary, and I think it's the best choice that could have been made with the players available. I really do. And Jill's always got, you know, a good couple of years in her before things go south. She always does.
As long as she don't have my Nikki Newman ran over by the Jack Daniel's delivery truck.
I didn't put it in the interview, but I said to her, okay, Jill, you know Melody Scott's the best fucking thing on the planet, right?
Okay. Logan, I told Jillian.
You know that, right, Jill? Okay, because don't mess with that.
Jillian and I were talking about that, I said, you have to understand. I said, Michael Logan loves Nikki Newman just as much as you do. And Jill Ferret Phelps is not going to mess with your girl. Y'all can go in on her together.
we're talking national treasure, you know? It's like,
tear that ass up on a
but can she put Victor Newman in an adult diaper and put him in a corner somewhere? Look, I will readily co-sign that and write a beautiful column saying that that is the most moving story I have ever seen. If they put him in an adult diaper with some oatmeal drooling down his chin as Nikki has to feed it to him and says, here, my love, here, my darling, and then goes out to screw Miguel's, you know, hunky nephew, Javier, you know, I will co-sign that story.
Look, I just want Jill to, like, fix her business. You know what I mean? Like, I just want Jill to – look, Jill has taken some flack, some of it, to me, I think, necessary. Some wasn't necessary. But I would readily, you know, give her a pass if she was to, you know, make sure that – you know, if she was to punish Eric a little bit, because he just – it's like, enough. You have bogarted that show for 30-plus years, man. Like, shut up. Like, you know, hush.
And deserve to for much of it. I will readily say – if this was 1988, all of those outbursts would be appropriate, but it's 2012, so
yeah.
Moving along. But what do you think, you know, what sense do you get? Because Maria came on and she restored the Abbott. She did all this good stuff the first year. We were, you know, we at DC were applauding her early on. I get flack from our readers because I started calling her Auntie Riri because
I do too.
You know, all of the stuff that first 6 months to a year. And then it just, after she basically cleaned up all of LML's messes, we got Chipmunks and So Long Sister Killer and volcanoes. And now the show, you know, just doesn't even feel right up to the very, I mean, this week with Sharon and this takeover and her screaming at the top of her lungs like Alexis Colby. It's like, what do you think that their first steps will be to restore this show to what it once was?
Well, I admire the fact that they weren't tempted to try to fix any of, you know, these last episodes, as they could have theoretically stepped in and, you know, tried to massage it a bit and prepare the, you know, the way for their, you know, for their stories. It kind of really asked me the question. I'm hopefully going to talk to Josh and have an interview with him next, you know, next week. But I did sense from Jill that they're very clear on, you know, Josh, you know, let's remember Josh did some pretty admirable work when he stepped in during the writer's strike here, you know.
Yeah.
So this is a guy that, you know, has already some investment. I think he really got the shaft when they didn't keep him, you know, when all that was done, said and done. You know, this is a guy that's, you know, that from everything I understand, admires and respects this show and has dug in deep to, you know, get back to what made it work so well for so many years. And, you know, there's a lot of damage to be, you know, controlled, but it does feel to me like it's going to be steady. It's going to be maybe more gradual than we'd all like, but that, you know, that they're very, very aware of how big the problem is. You know, it's just not recognizable. You know, it's just not.
Well, the most important question right now, Michael, is can Bill Bell's The Young and the Restless survive without Crystal Khalil?
You would be amazed. Our Facebook profile has people with a campaign to save her.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
There's no denying she is popular.
From everything I've ever heard, she scores very high with the fans and the polls and the emails and all, you know, and just all that stuff. Not quite sure why. I found myself kind of, you know, a little bit giddy when it looked like she wasn't, you know, going to be there anymore, because I thought to myself, yeah, good, we can really, you know, cast some real powerhouse and put her in here and see what, you know, what this part can be. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, that would be a good thing, but, you know, who knows how that'll turn out. But I thought it was a bit much her, interview she gave. After all I've done for this show, you know? I asked for one little thing, you know. Hello, who are we? Maurice Bernard here? I mean, you know, it's just Tony Geary. I mean, what exactly have you done for The Young and the Restless? You know?
She is like, when she said that to me, I was like, girl, are you Eric Braeden? You are beside yourself. I don't have anything against her. She's a lovely person, yada, yada. But, I mean, look, again, as I said on the podcast about Steve Burton, look, one monkey don't stop no show. Sorry, Crystal, if you cannot get what you want, then Jill
needs to... Why are you calling me a monkey? I don't like that. I think that's a...
Oh, my God.
I am going to have Victoria Arawa call the National Association of People, like, on you for calling me that.
Yeah, I wish she would. But, I mean, I wish that girl would. But, I mean, I'm sorry, like... Whatever, it's like, I don't see Spielberg knocking down her door to be in movie roles where she's like, the one thing I wanted, they won't give it because I don't think they feel that I'm worth it and it hurts. It's like, girl, shut up, zip it.
Well, let's move on to Days of Our Lives, which nothing we talk about can really affect story there because they tape 8 months out. But let's just do it anyway. What are your thoughts on the start of the 3,752nd reboot of Days of Our Lives, which is basically it, what we've seen is to kind of reset it back to the last reboot.
Oh,
what
exactly.
Are your thoughts?
Well, you know, the only thing that really has got me excited is that their ratings are up, you know? I mean, that they, you know, they got a nice post, you know, Olympics boost. I don't know if it was due to any promo they were doing or what it was, but that was
the disaster.
Really good. That was really good to see because I was getting a little nervous there. You know, I feel, you know, CBS is going to hang with their two soaps. I strangely feel it's turnaround at ABC that they are really behind General Hospital, and I'd love to say it, you know, that it's because they looked at the stupidity of canceling the other two and they're, you know, woken up to, you know, the reality of what they've done. I don't know what to make of it, but they're, you know, I really feel like they want to keep that show over there. So it's really like days that I've been worried about. You know, yeah. So it was good to see that, you know, that coming up there. I think that NBC's, it always makes me uncomfortable when the network's got its hands too much in this, and that's absolutely what's, you know, been going on. The previous writers being ousted was completely NBC-driven, and you know, they are calling the shots from everything to story to, you know, publicity at this point. I don't know that NBC's got the kind of track record, daytime, primetime, anytime, that that should be making us comfortable, but that is the way it is, yeah. And we'll just have to see. I'm just hoping, you know, hoping for the best, and
well, if Comcast will go after Jay Leno, you know Days of Our Lives will be in their sights at some point.
Well, hell yeah. Not that it hasn't always been, but, you know, when you see what happened at the Tonight Show, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, the thing of it is, a lot of, you know, we're all excited. It's so funny. Like, you broke recently that Nadia Bjorlund was returning as Chloe. And, you know, then you look at these dates, and it's like, you really have to almost set a calendar reminder, because it's like, oh, my God, Ellen Davidson is back. And, you know, we learned that in June, and we won't see her until October. And, like, Chloe, didn't you say January? I'm like, they have got to start taping closer to air again. Or do you think that's a?
Well,
do you think that it's worth it to save the money to do that?
Well, I guess it is if that becomes the priority. But what it what it does rob a show of is being able to change course if necessary. You know, because by the time you know something stinks,
right?
You got three more months of it in the can.
And that's really scary with this show in particular. I was thinking about it the other day. It's like, because, you know, because the last time we had you on, we talked about how, you know, if this reboot doesn't work, then in 6 months, then, you know, maybe they could readdress things. But it's like, okay, so if, say, in January they feel it's not working, then the new writers would come in or whatever, you know, they do with these reboots. And by the time their stuff would start airing, it's April, which is when contracts are decided. So, I mean, potentially, if it were to go bad, it would be a situation where, you know, it would be like with Another World, where there was only 2 weeks to write a finale or something. Like, you know, I worry because, you know, this is the last year of their contract, and, you know, Matt Lauer's got his Today's Professionals, you know, staring him in the face. So do you think that the time thing could hurt them in that regard?
Well, it doesn't help. You know, I don't know that that's going to be any kind of deciding factor. But if you're taking emergency measures to try to right some wrongs and save your ass, you know, you can't do it that way. I mean, it's like close to 3 months, right? I mean, back in the old days of when I got started, it was never more than 2 months. I've never seen anything like this, you know, and then eventually it got started getting a lot tighter for most of the shows. And now it's a little funky because people take all these, you know, weeks off at dark for 2 or 3 weeks and then catch up and lose time and back and forth. But most everybody's closer to a month and, you know, and even less on some of these things, you know. I mean, they were down shooting some General Hospital, apparently, from what I understand, some very Passions-esque stuff down in Long Beach on General Hospital that's going to be, you know, incorporated on air, you know, within a couple of weeks. So, Passions-esque, right out of the James E. Reilly playbook.
Oh wow! Does that mean Supernatural?
I love me by James E. Reilly, but not in Port Charles. I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to judge before I see it.
Supernatural or like Teresa?
It's close enough. Close enough.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's the tail end of the whole, you know, poison, you know, the poison plot that's going on here. And so it's a little interplanetary, but, you know, hopefully that too shall pass. But I mean, but they're down there shooting stuff that's going to be on, you know, very shortly. So it's like, you know, that's a much better place to be if you're going to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know what made me nervous, guys, was that little thing you had and was it today that you had about Days of Our Lives being really popular with conservatives?
Yes.
Well, yeah. that can't be good.
It explains a lot. But...
I mean, great for the ratings, but, like, you know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, cuts into your daringness when you're writing stories. So I don't know.
It might be a good vehicle for outreach, though, and education.
There's a way to look at it. Mm-hmm. I applaud you for that.
And that's, you know,
that's not where I first went, but yeah you're right. You're right.
With Bianca, you know, I remember reading a lot of the interviews that, you know, as that story went on, but then of course you have Agnes Nixon telling that it, you know, that you had diehard conservative women writing in, you know, that they wanted Bianca to get her baby back and things like that. So who knows? I mean,
remember what happened with Fish at the end? How, you know, when they aborted Fish suddenly. One Life to Live.
Yeah. You know, with that story, yeah, we kind of saw that. And, you know, I loved that story. I think that minus the big gay wedding, I think it probably would have gone down as probably the best. But yeah, so.
Yeah, but when they decided to, you know, move on rapidly, you know, they cited conservative viewers.
Yeah.
Having a problem with it, you know, so.
You know what, one thing I have to say, I saw it in our comments, and, you know, of course, you know, all of our readers, we welcome all their comments, but whenever, you know, because being, you know, being liberal or whatever and living in this, you know, celebrity-driven culture that is pretty much liberal-dominated, you tend to forget. And then, but when the whole Melissa Reeves Chick-fil-A stuff, I saw that we have a lot of conservative soap fans who were applauding Melissa Reeves. And yeah. I was like, well, you know, I mean, these are the people who are watching every day. It just made me kind of shake my head and go, this is what these writers, it made me want to cut them more slack, you know, because this is what they all have to deal with when they're trying to tell a Kish or a Nuke or a, you know, whatever it is, or, you know. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about daytime talk shows before we let you go, because we know that in TV Guide you've begun covering more, you know, you've always covered a myriad of topics in TV Guide, but you've covered a lot of the daytime talk shows of late. So what are your thoughts on the upcoming premiere of Katie? Do you think it'll sink or swim?
Well, when I heard her opening guest with Jessica Simpson,
I know!
I thought, what? That was like a WTF news announcement, if ever there was one. I don't know. I don't know what to think. She's got some obviously very interesting people. It's always going to be, you know, please, Barbara Streisand. You know, who's not going to watch, you know,
her yodel?
Babs eat Katie Couric for breakfast. You know, I mean, she's got some interesting people on there, but I don't know. I don't. I think she's. You know, she'll probably draw enough to, you know, make it, you know, a feasible, you know, financial, you know, project to continue it, hopefully, I guess. I don't know. But there's nothing in the promos that make me want to tune in. You know, Katie Couric sitting there doing her promo about how, you know, I come from a Leave It to Beaver family, you know, and the stuff that people do, it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to, you know, piss off half your audience here, but Ann Romney, you know, getting up last night at the convention, you know, trying to, you know, convince us she's just regular folks. No, some people are not regular folks. And when you try to, you know, try to tell stories that we see right through, you know, it just doesn't work. You know, Katie Couric's not regular folks.
Right.
She's not just like us. She's not just like us. Now, Ricky Lake's coming on. Ricky Lake is just like us, you know. I just interviewed Marie Osmond. She's coming on with a talk show on Hallmark. She's taken over for the Martha Stewart, that whole lineup that they got rid of. Marie Osmond's coming in there. Marie Osmond's one of those people that's just like us. I mean, she may be famous and rich, you know, and beyond all things, but, you know, she relates to the people.
Is she going to be on Hallmark with Jeannie Francis's 4,000 notebooks?
Yeah, it's going to be like, they got an hour. She's going to be on every morning for like an hour. It's, you know, strictly for the Hallmark, you know, crowd. But she's going to be dealing with a lot of interesting issues and personal stuff. I mean, she's been through every, you know, personal emotional crisis there, you know, there is, and she's going to get into that. But it's also going to be a lot of fun, kind of, you know, kind of more of a callback to the old Dinosaur, Mike Douglas kind of, you know, kind of format of just having some easy fun. And it's definitely Hallmark.
I watch a lot of Hallmark
audience. You know, well, she, you know, it's sad, and then they're going to, that Mark Steinis from Entertainment Tonight and Paige Davis from Trading Spaces, and then going to do, follow it up with, like, I think it's like a 2-hour daily, like a home improvement, home lifestyle kind of, you know, show that they're going to do. So that's going to be that, and I think that, you know, there'll be some real people appeal there, and Steve Harvey, I can't wait. You know, I think Steve Harvey's going to kill it. Much of the country, they have him and Ellen together, so it's going to be a 2-hour comedy daytime talk block, and I think I think he's going to do really well. Jeff Probst is coming out with something that looks kind of interesting. There hasn't been this much activity in talk shows I can't remember when this many big names were coming on in one season. This time last year, we only had Anderson Cooper.
Right, and Harvey's got a show coming out, and, you know, he's trying to dominate everything, you know, game shows, movies, books. It's like, how does he have the time to do a daily talk show?
I don't know. He's still doing the radio show. He's still doing Family Feud, and now he's doing this, and even moved to Chicago for it. I talked to him the other day, and he's just, you know, I mean, he's taken over, you know. And people love him, man. You know, I mean, people always have. But when his books came out, and they sold, like, those books were sold, like, you know, 3 million copies.
Yeah.
The movie, the Think Like a Man movie, I mean, that was number 2 at the box office for 2 weeks running. People pay money to go do. They don't sit, and if it's free, I like him kind of thing. People pay money to go for Steve Harvey, and that's a big, really healthy sign for him. I think he's going to do really super well, and it really is Katie, the one that's oddly, for all the hype and the money, is the one that seems
all that
least
money.
Interesting to me.
$80 million. I mean, basically, you know, people love to say, oh, it's syndication and it's a different pot, but there's a reason ABC has their syndication arm and their daytime arm under the same division. That $80 million is all my children and One Life to Live's production budget.
I'd like to think that this enthusiasm I'm talking about ABC feeling for General Hospital, I'd like to believe and hope it's legitimately for GH, but, you know, the cynic in me thinking like a whole lot of this is also giving, you know, Katie Couric the best boost possible.
Oh, that's it.
Not that they shouldn't, you know, but you know what's interesting, you know, talk about the, you know, you, we were talking a little bit about all the, you know, the veterans and, you know, GH hiring all these the people and then bringing the old guard back. And we had our Television Critics Association, session runs about 3 weeks, which I'm always trying to get, you know, Jamie to come be a member of. And,
they didn't let me in.
Yeah, they sure
did. I can see why, probably. I don't know. Just listen to one podcast, so we know it's too damn dangerous.
They're scared of us, Michael Logan.
They were like, no, you bitches are too wild.
Look, Joseph was like, if you let them here, I will never let you cover Pretty Little Liars again. Oh, my God.
But they did at TCA. ABC had a session for General Hospital. Okay, we are gearing up for the 50th anniversary coming in April there. But they brought out not the newbies, not the young new hot ones. They're always trying to peddle when they do these, you know, PR events. But they brought out Tony Geary, Maurice Bernard, Steve Burton, Jane Elliott came. I mean, nobody asked Jane Elliott to go anywhere. Jane Elliott was in the house. Nancy Gron, Laura Wright, they brought the big guns. And this salty, old, farty bunch of, you know, reporters that have been around, you know, since, you know, got born. You know, I mean, it's like they loved General Hospital. They couldn't ask enough great questions. They loved these people. They were so excited to see them. Jane Elliott had people pee in their pants that she showed up.
Oh,
and then they all came to our party that night, and they were surrounded all night. That people couldn't, you know, get enough of them. And it really said that this is, you know, this is the public. This is what people remember. And if General Hospital has hung on to these people, as all shows had, like The Young and the Restless has, and Bold and Beautiful have, that maybe, you know, they'd be number one and number two. You know, I mean, that show's got to move on. Sure, they got to add new people and keep it going. But it's like, you know, they were so willing to cut loose the veterans and kill them off in plagues, and you know, Stuart Damon. I mean, what we wouldn't give to have Stuart Damon back, you know?
Oh,
and it's like
Tony Jones.
I mean, these people they killed off for the big sweep stunts, and yeah, and that was Goose and Jill.
Yeah,
a lot of that was, you know. I gotta say, but you know, it's like they didn't hang on to their core people, and those that did are doing a hell of a lot better these days. So what? You can't convince me otherwise, you know?
Well,
so I think,
despite Jill saying her and Jeannie are all nicey-nice, what do you think about Jeannie going back to GH?
I predict Jeannie will be free when her contract comes up.
Yeah. I love the way you say that. She will be free. God.
Yeah.
It's like she's in Egypt and it set my people free.
Let me tell you something. When I read your interview, I'm not even going to lie, but she was like, we had a wonderful conversation. I was like, Jill, girl, give me a break. I'm like, that's code for we're cool. We spoke, and I told her, look, girl, you're about to go back to poor Charles. So say your goodbyes right about now.
Oh,
listen, you know, it's like it was like with Victoria Rao. When Jill wasn't going to comment any further, Jill was not going to comment any further. You know, she was very forthcoming and very cool, I thought, with most of it. There are just, with every exec, there's just places they are not going to go, you know. But I think anybody that's costing that show too much money and is superfluous and unfortunately as good as some of her work has been on YNR, I think Jeannie's in there, and most of Maria's people are, you know. I mean, I just think that, you know, we don't need, I love my Debbie Morgan. I don't care if Harmony stays or not.
Me,
you know,
too.
I don't
She needs
care.
To be run over by that rum truck.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, I don't, you know, it's like Stephen Nichol, you know, these people, God love them, but, you know, we don't need them. And if money's the issue and, you know, saving these shows is of utmost importance, then unfortunately these people need to go. And too many of them got hired and they're getting too much money. You know, it's a way on the show down. It just is. And the new reality, even if it's not something Ron Moss wants to face, or a lot of these people that, you know, get still on their high horses because they're not offered their old salaries, this is the new real. And if you don't want to take the gig.
Wait, it wasn't about money. The clock stopped. It stopped at the time.
10:09 or some jive that he said. I was like, what are you talking about, man?
The time that he was born, wasn't it? It stopped at the time that he was born.
Well, hell, a lot of shit stopped at the time that I was born.
I was like, what?
The clock stopped at my dressing room at the exact hour that I was born. And I looked at Logan. And then I looked over at Doc. And I looked back at Logan because I couldn't look at Doc.
Oh, no.
God. I emailed Jamie and I said, you know, usually for the first time in history, I'm not pissed that EW got his son's exclusive. Because I would have shot myself halfway through that interview.
Oh,
you know,
I mean, it's a reporter wrote. They were like, in parentheses, he is a talker. I was like, oh my god, that was so
embarrassing when a reporter says that.
Oh, that was so foul. I was like, god if damn.
Oh yeah. If there's one person you should not, you know, we always, when we interview actors, we always, or whoever, we always help them out. And if it's a really good interview and people are well spoken, you go Q&A. And if you're not, you do it as a write through. You know, you work with sound bites. And work around them, and you know, help them along. You know, that's what you do as a professional.
Now you're ruining it though, because these actors are gonna know whenever we do parody.
But you know, but Ron Moss, God love him, and he is a dear man. I've always, always, always liked that guy. He's really cool. Marches to his own strange drummer, but he's a cool, decent, good person. You know. And I just, he's the last person that should have been allowed to speak in Q&A form, to go on and to go on and to go on. And you know something that's so not EW style? You know, most of their stuff they put up on the web is short, blurby, fast, hot, get it out there. You know, I've never seen them do this.
They see what you've known for decades and what we've known the last 5 years, that soap fan will help you pay your bills. And that's why these like that are jumping up into the soap game. And you can tell they don't even watch when they're like,
You can tell they don't do their homework.
Soap Rabbit is in his Hollywood eyes. I'm like, oh, she is. That's what she is.
They were like, they talked about Doug Davidson. They were like, yeah, Doug Davidson, his son Ricky. I'm like, don't you mean Paul, you fool? I'm like, oh, God. It's terrible.
That's somebody who is like, they're hating their life because they really want to be writing for The New Yorker. Like, oh, my God, I got stuck with these goddamn soap interviews.
Oh, exactly.
Well, it could be worse, though. I was reading a news story on, like, I think it was the Mail or in UK, and they were saying that Katie Couric took over from Walter Cronkite, legendary Ron.
Oh, God.
And I was like, what the world?
I'm sure he did, right? I'm not having an episode.
All I got to say is I love my soap peeps, man. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I find these people and this behind the scenes drama and the shit that goes on so fascinating and fun and, you know, just really great, interesting people for the most part that have a lot of great stuff to say. And I would never pee on this. I would never, you know, think I'm getting the short end of the stick because I write about these guys. I love it. Always have, always will, you know. And anybody doesn't get that, you know, just a fool.
Do you think, though, that social media has sort of changed that whole, you know, the behind-the-scenes drama now that it's kind of being thrusted into fans, you know, faces now? Do you think it's sort of changed that whole allure for the fans a little bit? Or maybe some of them might get turned off by these contract negotiations and Crystal Khalil putting all her business out there?
And people showing out on Twitter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I think it's the Twitter thing that's the, you know, that's really changing things, you know? But I even find, like, you know, God, Frank Valentini's going on Twitter giving out his own scoops, you know? I mean, it's like, it's like the world's got Twitter nuts. I don't know.
And then they get mad at us for doing it.
It's sure changing stuff, and it'll be interesting to see where we all are with this because, you know, and these actors, a lot of them, I think, are just kind of finding it, you know, this new frontier, and some of them don't handle it very well. And
my account's been hacked.
People get.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite.
Oh, yeah, my account's been hacked. Yeah.
Yeah, Brandon, buddy, you got hacked
on
a Friday.
We love it. Hey, we keep tweeting actors. You know who you are.
Yes.
Nothing beats an actor who's drunk tweeting.
I know. That needs new pairs.
I do have a question for you, though, about Ricky Lake, and it is this. How long do you think that this wonderful new format will last before it devolves into Maury Povich again?
Oh, and Ricky? Oh, God. You know, I kind of wonder about a lot of them, you know, because it's funny that, you know, the Maury Povich's and Springer and, you know, these guys, you know, they go for years and years kind of under the radar, but their ratings are solid. These shows cost practically nothing, and these are monster successes,
franchises.
You know, and I can see the, you know, the temptation if say Ricky comes on or you know, Maury's got a spinoff, Trisha Goddard, you know, the Brit gal, mm-hmm. that substituted for him. I mean, she was a guest on the show a lot of times, but then would substitute for him when he was away and actually got better ratings than he did. She's got her own show now that NBC, you know, Uni is producing. So that's still a very healthy, viable form, and I can see there being pressure to, you know, if out of the box, some of these shows aren't working, to, you know, perhaps go there. I mean, Anderson's got having a, be interesting to see what he does second season, because they're doing already a makeover on him, not getting, you know, Jerry Springer, you know, punch each other kind of programming, but you know, they're changing it up, you know, because they had to, and you know, these shows were. A couple of these shows were saved with not all that, frankly, very encouraging ratings. You know, Anderson really wasn't doing that well, but, you know, he's a big enough name, and I guess there was enough faith in it to, you know, to want to give it another chance. But, yeah, I can see Ricky maybe, you know, having some trouble or, you know, a couple of these things. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Katie. You know, I don't know what their expectations are. You know, I don't know what their, you know, nobody's going to get Oprah numbers anymore. It's just not going to happen.
Oprah doesn't get Oprah numbers.
You know, Oprah doesn't. I just
you can tell. Discovery.
She had to go to the Kardashian bank account and insert the credit card.
Discovery told her, "Look at her. You can live your best life on your own dime. You are about to interview Rihanna and ask her about Chris Brown, and you're gonna interview Snooki next, and you're gonna like it, Oprah."
Yeah, and that's what's finally getting them on the map, you know, ratings-wise. You know, it's nothing compared to what they, you know, of course, had. But people are seeing that this is not to be ignored. I mean, you may not be able to understand it or like it, but, you know, get a Kardashian on your show, and, you know, you're gold. And and I just interviewed, I did a piece on Ianla, because she's, you know, got her show on OWN coming on. It's not a talk show. It's a, you know, a self-realization program. But I saw the first two episodes of it, or two episodes. They're gonna, the first one's going to be with that you know, the Chad Ochocinco's estranged wife, what's her name, Evelyn. She's going to be the first one there. So already with that show, they're, you know, jumping on who's hot on TMZ. You know, so it's like, this is what people are doing, you know.
Well, Michael Logan, we could talk to you all day about daytime and would love to, but what we want to do, because we know how much you love primetime too, we want to have you back in a couple of weeks once the fall TV season is underway and do this again for Pop Confidential and just get your thoughts on what's coming
the good
up
wife.
With Revenge and The Good Wife and everything else. And,
Nashville.
I'd be happy to. Nashville is going to kick ass. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is good. With Hayden Panettiere playing herself. She is not digging deep for this part, let me tell you. Listen, I don't care who knows it. I spent 4 years working on Heroes over for TV Guide over there, and the hell that girl put me through, I know what I'm talking about. Time captain.
But you love as a podcast.
It's a good show. It really is. It's going to be. Really. There's a lot of good stuff. You know, it's like a lot of past seasons have been like, oh god, I've like you can even find one thing to get excited about. But there's so much good stuff. So I'd love to come back and talk to you guys whenever you want. So just say the word, huh?
Thanks so much for being here. And look, the way daytime is going, we might call you back next week. Because
well, you know, it's so funny. The first 2 months of this summer was so dead. So dead. Nothing was going on. I didn't file anything for – there was a period I didn't file anything for like 6 weeks. It was crazy. And I think I'm like, did my phone break? I mean, everybody stop speaking to me. What's going on? I go on Daytime Confidential. I'm going, nope, they ain't got nothing either. You know, it's like
– it was hard back then. We were like, look, Luke, we might have to start putting nudie pics up.
It was sad. And then all of a sudden, here it all happens. And we're back in biz.
Yeah.
It's hard out there for a pimp.
Thank you so much.
All right, kiddos. You guys take care. We'll talk again, huh?
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.